Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Love podcast, your guide to everything love, sex, intimacy, and relationships. Each week, your host, Zach Beach, interviews new experts on love, including couples therapists, relationship coaches, sex educators, and best-selling authors. Learn the best tips and cutting-edge wisdom to better love yourself, others, and the world. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, beautiful souls. I'm so positively delighted that you could join us on the Learn to Love podcast. I am your host, Zach Beach, and I'm excited to introduce our guest for today's episode, Dr. Heather Brown. Dr. Heather Brown is a relationship expert and marriage and family therapist who has worked with thousands of individuals and couples in therapy. She is a TEDx and keynote speaker, has an active TikTok channel, has been featured on ABC7 News, and was the relationship expert on KDOC Daybreak OC. She is widely published in both magazines and journals and firmly believes in the power of communication. So she came on to the show to talk about her book, Speaking with the Heart, Transforming Your Relationship and Communication with Compassion and Connection. So without further ado, let's begin. Hello, Dr. Brown. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Zach.
How are you today?
I am great. How are you?
I'm super great and super excited, and I'm so happy to have you here with us today. And, you know, you have this book, Speaking with the Heart. So I have to ask, will you be speaking with the heart today? Or do you feel like speaking with the heart is something we reserve for those special somebodies in our life?
Well, I would hope we speak with the heart at all times. But certainly there are some people that get deeper and deeper parts of our heart than other people may. And that makes sense. Some people hold a bigger inventory on our heart than some. Yeah.
I have a silly question, which is, if the heart could speak, what do you think it would say?
It would probably say that love and the heart are the most amazing, incredible thing, and appreciate us and enjoy us and live in us.
Whoa. And what brought you to that conclusion?
Oh, I think it's just life. Just doing life, you know, for so many years in so many ways, and being a therapist for 27, just really recognizing we all desperately want to be loved. And we all wrestle with feeling not loved and with not loving ourselves and not loving others.
It's true. I wholeheartedly agree that love is a pretty incredible thing. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't seem as incredible. I was reading in your book that we kind of all know that half of all marriages end in divorce. But I was reading in your book that that number increases to 60% for second marriages and 73% for third marriages. And it's like counterintuitive, because don't you think people would be better the second time around? Don't you think they would have like learned from the mistakes with those like first two marriages and they've corrected themselves on the third one? Like, why does it get less stable after the subsequent marriages?
Well, I think because we have the opportunity in the first to decide, are we going to figure this out? And when you don't, and then you go into a second marriage, unless both of you are really committed to, okay, this time we're not going to walk away, you kind of have the habit of walking away. And then by third, fourth, and fifth, unless your partners, you know, die, you're showing a pattern of, I'm bringing me, and maybe I'm part of the challenge. I think we feel, if I just leave this relationship, I'm going to go find, you know, my princess or my prince. But the reality is, you created the challenge also. It wasn't just your partner. We'd like to believe it's just our partner's responsibility, but it is equally ours. And so when you don't make the first one work, you've got a pretty good chance you might not make the second one work either.
So that's so interesting, because what I'm basically hearing is that relationships are assignments. We have lessons to learn from them. And we tend to attribute the problems we're experiencing in a relationship to the person. So we discard that person for a new person. And there we go again, the exact same problems we had in the first relationship that we had yet to solve.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then we wonder, why does this keep happening? We forget that we create the pattern. We think the pattern just happens. It's like people saying, you made me mad, you made me sad. We don't take the responsibility of, well, I've got to decide how I'm going to respond or how I'm going to react. And am I going to really give you power over me to determine how I feel?
Most of us do that. We make the other person responsible for our feelings.
I love that. We create the patterns in our relationship. It's kind of silly, but sometimes like shirts have like a checkered pattern and it's like, yeah, it takes two,
exactly.
two formats combining to create a pattern and the patterns, and you are contributing to the patterns that create problems in your relationship.
With whatever level you involve yourself and engage, because there's always that place of, well, how do you respond? Do you respond? Do you stay in? Do you step out for a moment? Do you say, I got to do this differently? This isn't working for me. Or do you just allow it to be what it is? It's up to us to decide, how do we want our relationship to be and how committed are we to trying to cultivate what it is that we want?
I like that you bring up commitment, because that was one thing I was considering, thinking about how subsequent marriages have a higher failure rate, is that the people that end up getting divorced end up not being as committed to the idea of marriage or the idea of lifelong commitment. So then you take two of those people and put them together, and that marriage also is probably not going to pan out.
Well, and I think also, and this might be coming from being a therapist, so audience, this could be off, and I have to like own my potential bias. But I think also when you go into a second marriage, a lot of times the thought is, I just want to be happy. I just want someone who makes me happy. I want to have everything I didn't have in my first. I think a lot of times in the first marriage, we actually are a little bit more committed to, I want to love you and I want to make this really beautiful for both of us. I want to have a family. I want to have a house. I want to have the dogs. I want to be with you forever. And when we get to marriage two and three, it really turns a lot more into, what can you do for me that I didn't have? I'm a widow. So when I look at dating profiles, what I'm always shocked by is how much the person says, I want this and I want this and I want this and I want this, and you better look good in shorts and wear sexy shoes and you better, you know, bake and cook. And I'm like, okay, lovely, but what are you going to do for me?
Right. What are you bringing to the table?
Right. And I think when we start, a lot of times we really do try. And then when you get to the second, unless you've got two people who've really figured it out, which happens quite a bit too, but I think the focus becomes a little bit more selfish. And then third, fourth, fifth, this isn't working. This isn't what I wanted. You don't make me happy. That's what I hear a lot in my office. Don't I deserve to be happy? Like, well, do you think your partner's responsible for making that happen for you? And they're like, wait, what? Like, aren't you responsible? I'm not saying you need to stay with your partner, but aren't you responsible for creating your own happiness?
That's so interesting, because one thing that's coming up for me is basically we all kind of have perhaps some wounding, and perhaps that wounding goes all the way to childhood. And unconsciously or even consciously, we enter into new relationships with the hopes or even expectations that that person is going to heal us, that that person is going to fix us. So in the case of second marriages, what I'm hearing from you is people often have like a hole that they experienced in the previous relationship, and they expect this future relationship to fill that hole.
Well, I think it's a challenge, and it's part of the reason why rebounds don't work very well, is because you look for someone who's completely different than the partner you're with and just feels that one part you didn't have. But that doesn't mean that's the only part that you want. And so if you had someone who didn't buy gifts, you find someone who's got lots of money and they buy you gifts. But after a period of time, there's other aspects that are important as well. So there is that place of, am I stepping into a relationship really solid with who I am? When people say, I'm looking for my missing half, it sounds lovely. And my therapist head says, oh God, no, it's not your other half. You're not incomplete without the other person. You're you. Now, can a union be even better than the two people on their own? Oh, I think so. Can be amazing, but it's still important that both people take care of themselves.
So to you, if a person says, oh, you complete me, is that a red flag?
A little bit. Yeah, I'll ask, like, in what way? If they say, oh, you just make my life better, great. Oh, you bring out things within me I didn't even realize before, but I love, great. But if it's, yeah, I didn't want to be alone, uh-oh, you know? So it depends on why you wanted to be in that relationship and what that person is fulfilling for you. Of course, there's aspects that are fulfilled. You know, sex is a huge part of it. Physical attention, partnership. There's a lot, taking care of each other and enjoying each other. But if you're not really solid within yourself and you're looking for somebody else to fill you, now they've got a responsibility. And what you're saying is, I get to be three quarters, but you have to be one and a quarter? Like, wait, what? It doesn't work. And relationships don't work when we are dependent upon somebody else to help us be okay.
Yeah, it's almost a paradox, right? In order to be with somebody without being, say, dependent on them or needing them to complete you, you have to be complete and fine with being yourself first. Yeah.
Partnering, companioning, not completing. There's a huge difference.
So I'm wondering if any of the things we are currently discussing ties into this next question, because in almost all my interviews, I love to read my guests' books and come up with my own questions. But this is one that you had in your list, and I had to know the answer, because the question is, what's the lie that destroys relationships? So I saw that question, and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to figure that out. What is the lie that destroys relationships?
The belief that the other one no longer loves you.
Oh.
Now, sometimes it will be true, but most times it's not. And so there's this really wild dynamic that happens. If I start to question and think that you don't love me, then I start to pull back. I start to kind of like look at you and gauge what you're saying or what you're doing. So I'm kind of skeptical. I'm looking for proof that you don't love me, which you then pick up as, I don't trust you. I'm not enjoying you. I'm apprehensive. And then you kind of pull back because you're unsure about why that's happening. And then it just spirals and spirals and spirals. But if you think about it, what's the question that you ask most times in a relationship? Do you love me? Like, we start to doubt the other person. And sometimes it's their actions or their words. But when we start to believe that, then we see them as someone who no longer loves us, even though they might not be. And it goes into the challenge of lying. So if I'm scared to tell you something because I think you'll be mad at me, so I don't tell you, over a period of time, I now look at you as somebody who couldn't handle who I really am. And then I don't feel safe with you. But yet I have made myself not safe for you because I have lied to you. And so we flip it. And then we make the other person that you're judgmental, like you're not loving enough. And you might be unbelievably unconditionally loving of me, but I don't give you the opportunity. And then I don't feel like you really know who I am. And then I don't feel loved. And you, poor thing, have just been there thinking I'm telling you my truth. We create such a mess for ourselves.
So it almost becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It does become one. Yeah, it does. And it starts with, I don't think you'll love me, which is so sad because we're in a relationship to be loved. I used to drive home and tell myself, remember you love him, remember you love him, remember you love him. And then I would walk in the house really differently than if I didn't say that. Otherwise, I'd be like, I'm home. But if I said that, I'd be like, okay, I'm home. We got to talk about this a little bit more. And then we'd move into a mutuality. We forget that we're a we. And we start to feel like you're a you and you're against me.
So let's go a little bit deeper into this because I'm almost imagining like a fire alarm. You know, like 90% of the time it goes off. It's you're just burning the popcorn, right? So let's say we notice this encroaching belief that our partner is not in love with us. How do we approach that false alarm?
Ask. Hey, I don't know what's going on and it might just be me, but I'm feeling super insecure. It feels different in our relationship. I'm wondering if your feelings for me have changed. And then the person's either going to say, a little bit, I'm frustrated that, and then you work on it. Or they're going to say, no, I'm absolutely fine. But when we hear that, a lot of times we won't accept it. We think our partner's not being honest. If I tell you, I think you're really handsome, you don't think you are, that doesn't mean that I don't think you are. But we treat it as if that's the truth. You don't really mean that. I just told you that. Well, you don't really mean it. I just told you that. So what we respond to is, well, I don't think that's true. Not you think it's true. And that's where we mess up a lot in our relationships and our communication. Because we ask someone a question, we don't agree with it. And then we don't agree with what they've said.
That's why I find self-love is so key. Because, you know, if we don't think of ourselves, let's just say as attractive, because we're using this as an example. If I think I'm unattractive and my partner tells me I'm beautiful, I'll conclude my partner's a liar rather than it's my view that needs to be changed.
The place that broke that free for me was with when I was in New York. I'm 6 feet and used to be 6'1". And I was standing on a street corner and I was surrounded by these very tall men, German, Russian. They're all like 6'3", 6'5". And I looked around and I went, oh my gosh, I'm small. And then they stepped off the street corner. And once again, I was an Amazon. But my brain kind of went, warning, because I realized I was 6'1" before they stepped on the corner, when they were on the corner, and after. I hadn't changed. My environment had changed. And so my environment then changed the way I viewed myself. It's really critical. We don't think about that. So I can still be tall, even with men who are 6'5". I'm just smaller, but I'm definitely not small. And we forget that the reality that we're stepping into defines us. And so there's the place of recognizing that and saying, okay, I'm stepping into a room of supermodels. I will 100% be the least attractive woman in the room, but that doesn't mean I'm unattractive. It just means within this room, I'm less attractive than everybody else. And so there's the place of realizing that. And then also realizing everything is opinion. We all have different views of what beauty is. Now, the key isn't to have a partner who believes what you believe in a negative construct about yourself. The key to have is have a partner who either accepts you as you are or has a different viewpoint of that construct. So if you think I'm beautiful, then I can just enjoy the fact that I'm with somebody who thinks I'm beautiful, even if I'm not really feeling I am as great as I'd like to be. But it's really important to let your partner have their opinions because it's their opinion. Doesn't make it yours. And it doesn't make it right. It just makes it theirs. And we get caught on that. Who's right? Well, you both are for yourself, but you're not right for the other. And that's important to be able to recognize. I asked my husband one time when we were early on dating, I said, how do you want me to do my hair and makeup? And he said, why are you asking me this? And I said, well, you're the one who's going to be looking at me all night long. And he said, I've never had a woman ask that. Probably a smart thing for a woman to ask. And a lot of people have come back and said, oh, Heather, you're just a people pleaser. And I would never ask that. And I said, okay, that's fine. I wanted him to be attracted to me. So I wanted to know how he liked me to look.
That's so interesting. It almost seems like the flip side of this basic idea in relationships that we want to accept our partner's reality, even when it seems very different than our own. Because a lot of times this principle is used when your opinions really differ. But in this case, it's kind of the flip side of that, where if your partner tells you you're beautiful, believe him.
Truly. I think you're brilliant. Okay. I think you're funny. Okay. We do the silliest thing, which is we negate compliments. We negate love often. And I know it's our own, you know, our negative bias against ourselves and against the world, which we all have. But when you have a moment where it's not being shared with you, how beautiful. Like my kids see me better than I am. They do. They see me beyond where I am, which is awesome because it just really encourages me to keep on trying. But I don't fight them and say, no, I could never be that. I'm like, wow, you see that in me. Okay, let's see if I can do it. We've got the choice of which way do we want it to be. And if you think I'm amazing, why would I want to tell you I'm not? It's such a weird thing. We want our partner to love us, but when they tell us they like something about us, we say no, and we put it down. And then we wonder later on why they don't want to be with us. We've told them we're not pretty. We've told them we're not smart. We've told them that, you know, that we're a loser in this way and the other way. And then we wonder why they don't look at us like we're magical. Well, they're listening to what we say and they might not agree with us. But after a while, you stop saying it. If I tell you you're, you know, super handsome for a month and every day you say, no, I'm not, I'm eventually going to stop telling you because it's not doing you any good. Because you don't care that I feel differently than you feel about you. And then we stop hearing it. And then we come back and say, you don't think I'm attractive? Like, no, I told you for a month that you were, but you negated it every single time. So now I have stopped. But I need you to tell me, okay, are you going to receive it this time if I tell you? I have a chapter in my book on giving and receiving. A lot of us have a really hard time with receiving. And there's a lot to look there. Like, why? Why will I not take your compliment and just say, thank you? I'm so glad. How awesome that is. Why do we need to decide if we can receive somebody else's compliment?
Yeah, it brings me to this idea that relationships bring out the best in us. And a huge reason for that is our partner sees the best in us. That allows us to see the best in us and bring more of it forward.
Isn't that really like the best relationship to be in? I see you beyond where you are, and I still want to support you, encourage you, and uplift you to become more of who you want to be. That's glorious. If they were just to see you exactly as you are and that's it, I mean, then we're just in a relationship of decline. Yuck. You want that. And that's why I want to be in a relationship. I want to be with somebody who like helps me tap into parts of myself that I'm not tapping into as much as I could with their support or encouragement or fun or love or adventure thought process. Like, let me help my head go to a place it doesn't normally go. Got plenty of my thought. But how do you look at things? How do you think about things? Yeah.
So I'm wondering about the other 10% of the time that the fire alarm goes off and actually our relationship is on fire. And I'm wondering if it ties a little bit into today's topic on speaking from the heart, speaking with the heart. And we confide in our partner that things have been feeling off. And they're like, yeah, I feel off too. I feel disconnected. I feel like I don't love you as much. Now, people don't usually say this, but for the sake of argument, be like, yeah, I'm not feeling as connected and close and loving as we once did. What's the path back to reconnection?
So it starts right there with recognizing, gosh, this doesn't feel as good. We don't feel as good as we used to. I'm not really clear on where you are or what you're thinking or what's going on. And then to talk about it. One of the things that I ask couples to do every single day is to ask, is there some place that I've fallen short for you? Or is there some place that I missed you today? And most times someone's going to say, yeah, you forgot about, or I wanted you to be more excited about. And then you can correct it. And then the next one is, and where did you feel the most loved or the most supported? And then ask, would you like to go even deeper right now? And then that way, every single day, you're correcting places where there's a little bit of muck, and you're also trying to drop in deeper where you can. But most of us don't do that. And so we haven't really been talking. We haven't really been engaging. And you just don't feel as close. There's something called the position, and I encourage couples to do it, which is for 5 minutes every day, cuddle up together in each other's arms. It's not foreplay, but it can be if you want it to be. And the focus is just to be together as partner and partner, not like what happened with the plumber and what happened with Johnny at school, but I've missed you. It feels so good to be with you. I'm so glad you're home. Just connecting beautiful comments for person to person. You're no longer the husband, the wife, the husband, the husband, the wife, you know, if it's same-sex relationships. You're out of that role and you're just back to the essence of who you are and who you are together. When you do that, you fall back into that place of the other person being really important to you and you feeling important to them. And then the rest of the night, your conversations are different. We do it and I'd go to the dinner table instead of Ted saying, could you pass the salt? I'm like, sure. He'd say, baby, you pass the salt? And I'd say, yeah, honey. My kids would laugh. Like, you did that thing, didn't you?
I'm
like, we did that thing. But what is it? It's connection. We all want it. It's what happens in the beginning of the relationship. You know, they touch your hand and you're like, you can't, they hug you and you're going to melt. I mean, part of that is falling in love, but part of that is also just connection. And then we stop letting that be a priority, except for maybe sex. But we don't let those little moments, and you can do it with any word, with any look, with any gesture, by just recognizing that that person's really important to you. It's a whole different way of being. It's really lovely.
Love is lovely.
Love is lovely, isn't it? Yep.
Yeah, I love those couple check-ins that you offered, basically like what's going well and what can we work on? So you mentioned like, straight up asking our partner, is there some place that I've fallen short? Is there some place today that we were disconnecting? And
yeah.
Then flip that around and ask, is there another point where you felt loved and supported? And through that continuous feedback, we simply become better partners to each other.
And you can't have a day that goes by where you can't say,
my partner like didn't care about me, didn't think about me, didn't try to fix something. And if you're not honest, then that's on you. If there was something you were frustrated about, but you don't say anything, then that's on you. Your partner asked, your partner cared. And then that takes you to a really important place of, ooh, they're wanting us to be better. Am I going to let that happen? It is really important, though, if you ask your partner, is a place that I fell short or I didn't come through, if they say, yeah, you didn't respond the way, it's not okay to beat them up when you ask that question. So if you ask it, it's not that you will possibly feel the way they feel about it, but you're not asking, is this what you think? You're asking because you want to make certain that you have come through in the way that they want you to. I used to do it every month where I'd say, where have I been just like rock star as a mom? And then I would keep doing it. And then I'd say, where have I blown it? And they would come up with something and I would work on it. Because my viewpoint was, if I can be better with you, I'm going to be better with you. And I'm going to learn how to love you better.
It reminds me, earlier we were saying it's hard to receive sometimes, referring to the positive affirmations. But that's also hard to receive areas that we're deficient.
Well, aren't we fascinating creatures? Because I think we negate the positive most times, and then we reject the negative.
Okay.
So we're not taking in the good, and then we push away the bad. Whereas the way I look at it is, I better take in the good as much as I possibly can, because Lord knows I need it, and Lord knows I want it. That's why you're in a relationship, to get the goodies. And then with the things that I can improve on, I try really hard to look at it as, I'm going to be even better than I have been. And I can be. And you're going to see that. Not that you're, because if you think about it, if you ask your partner, is there a place I've fallen short for you, or is a place I haven't come through? What you're saying is, help me love you better. So if you get angry with them for sharing that, like, why the hell are you asking? If you really want your partner to feel loved by you, then it's going to be important to ask that question.
So your book is entitled Speaking with the Heart, Transforming Your Relationship and Communication with Compassion and Connection. Let's get right to it. What does speaking with the heart look like?
It looks like someone who decides that they're going to care also about the other person. So I'm going to care about your experience. I'm going to be curious about how you look at things. I'm going to want to know what it is that you need or what it is that you want. Not to the detriment of me, not in a, you know, a people-pleasing way. But if I'm going to be in this relationship, it's really important that I care about what's important to you. And I think adding compassion to anything softens it. Adding love to anything softens it. Doesn't necessarily end it, but it softens it. If you trip over my foot, and I say, it wasn't my fault, you're not going to feel that I care. If you trip over my foot and I say, oh my gosh, are you okay? And I help you up, then even though you still might think I did it intentionally, you're going to realize at least I feel badly about it. And then if I say, you know, I'm so sorry you tripped, my foot was out, I didn't know you wouldn't see it, I'm so sorry, then you realize that it wasn't something that was intentional. But there's the place of, am I going to care about you? Now let's go further. If we're going to engage with another human being, why would we not care about them? It just comes from a place of, do you choose to live in the world in a way that is caring about other people and other people's experiences? Not everybody does. And for that reason, my book will not be right for a lot of people, but it will be right for people who want to grow in compassion, who want to grow in self-love, who want to grow in connection and want to deepen their communication and their relationship. Yeah.
That's what I think is one of the most simple definitions of love, is that it's simply a genuine care for another human being. And I love this idea of bringing the heart in means we're communicating in such a way that we care about the other person with compassion.
And the conversation will be completely different. It's completely different. I start conversations that are important with the people who I care for deeply by saying, you are so important to me. I love you. And we need to have a conversation that's kind of a tough one. And I want it to go well. So can we just walk through this gingerly and carefully? And then I'll start walking it through and I'll say, how are you feeling? How are you doing? And when I feel like, I'll say, hey, I got to take a moment. Give me a moment. Give me a moment. I'm starting to get pissed off. Give me a second. And I'll breathe and I'll focus and I'll remember the person's just telling me their truth. It doesn't mean they're putting me down. And that way I can stay present. If you start a conversation knowing what the other person wants out of it and knowing if the other person is invested in your well-being as well, it's not the kind of conversation we normally think we're having. Because most of us just step in and then we hope the person will care about our thoughts and our feelings. We hope the conversation will go well, but it's risky. And so if you take a little bit of time, I have a chapter about what are the four questions to ask before an important conversation. They change everything if you ask them, because then you know you're both on the same page and you know where you're trying to go. I like to use the analogy of a recipe. If I'm going to make spaghetti, I don't just open up my cupboards and my refrigerator and just throw everything in and hope it's going to be spaghetti. I follow the recipe. I make certain I have everything. I've got the time, got the utensils, what have you. Why is a conversation not like a recipe? Where do we want to go?
Yeah. Or it's not going to taste good at all.
And isn't that what happens? And then, so we'll start a conversation with, oh, I friggin' hate that you do this. It pisses me off. Do you think at the end of that conversation, that person's going to think, I love you so much? No. If you want the outcome to be that they love you, you got to start from a place that cultivates love. But we don't do that. And then we think throwing the words out there is somehow going to magically end up with it working. It doesn't. Words are just descriptions of feelings and thoughts. The key is the feeling and the thought, not the word. Words are wonderful, but they're simply definers. And sometimes they're pretty vague. Blue, pretty vague. Love, pretty vague. So if we're not clear on where we're going and where we're wanting to go, we're not ready for that conversation. And if we can't have a conversation where we care about the other person's feelings also, we're not ready to have that conversation. Because then it's a battle or a fight or a lecture.
So you brought it up. So I have to ask, four questions to ask before a conversation.
Yeah.
Make sure we have the right ingredients. What are some of those questions?
You got it. So why are you having this conversation? What is the outcome you want to have? Because that way you start to pace the conversation in the very best way. Are you sure that this conversation is going to bless the relationship or the other person? Is it going to help the relationship? Is it going to help the other person? If you can't bring it in that energy, you're not ready to have the conversation. Doesn't mean it's not the right conversation to have, but you're not ready. There's got to be a benefit that you see, because otherwise the person's going to feel like you're just attacking them. Third, are you open to their viewpoint and their opinions? How many of us go into conversations and we're not?
Right.
So we need to tell them, I'm just going to share with you my feelings. I don't want any feedback. Okay, that's valid. That's valid. You can have that conversation.
Oh, okay, that's allowed.
But let them know. I'm just going to tell you what I've decided. I've totally decided. I don't want any feedback, but I thought I should fill you in. Well, your partner's not going to feel really respected, but that's valid. Sometimes we're in a situation where that's happened. I had to make a decision. You weren't here. I hope you're okay with it. It's already decided. This is what it is. Your mother's moving in with us. Hope it's okay. You know. And then the fourth is this a good time? That one is so key. So often it's a really important conversation. You really need to have it. You need your partner's input, but you've been thinking about it for a month. And so when you're finally ready to talk to them about it, you come to them and say, we need to talk about your mom moving in. Your partner might be way back at zero. You got to give them time to get caught up. And then also, sometimes we don't have the bandwidth for it. Here's the key. If you go to your partner and say, we need to talk about your mom moving in. I know it's a really important conversation. I want it to go well. Let me know when you're ready. Then when your partner comes to you, you've got agreement. They're stepping in. Hey, I'm ready to talk about my mom moving in now. You're already on the same page. That's vital. If you can start a conversation already feeling connected, and then you bring in your compassion, you're really important to me. I want this to go well. Let's keep pacing each other through this. It feels communal. It's not a fight. It's not defensive. It's not an argument. But we foolishly don't do that. It changes so much of the conversation you're going to have.
Yeah, I love these questions because they're a really wonderful check-in, right? You're checking in with yourself. Are you coming from a place of the heart? Are you coming from a place of love or one of anger and criticism? So we have, why are you having this conversation? Will it bless or benefit the relationship? Are you open to even hearing another person's viewpoint? And is now a good time? And I do like that third question, because a lot of times it's like, we need to talk. I need to tell you how I'm feeling. And there isn't that necessary openness to, well, okay, communication is a two-way road.
Well, that would be a declaration. And sometimes you can have a declaration, but don't tell the person it's a conversation, because it's not. I'm just declaring. You're just going to listen. Okay.
Yeah. So you have a chapter on the three most difficult conversations: money, family, and sex.
Yeah.
Are those the three? Those are the big ones. Are those what are the source of most relationship conflict?
And divorces. Yes.
So, you know, something like money, for example, it seems like a very, say, logical, straightforward thing to talk about. You know, it's just numbers that we're figuring out here. How do we bring the heart into conversations around money?
Well, there's a lot in that, because your partner might not have the same value as you place upon certain things. And so how much do you spend? Why do you spend? Do you save? Are you on time? How much do you work? How much do you gift? There's so many things around money. And are you upfront and honest? You know, people have hidden accounts and hidden credit cards. It's important to make certain that you're on the same page with that. When I met my husband, I'd been in one other serious relationship before him, but that was it. And I didn't know that you needed to ask your partner to reveal things to you. Probably part of the reason why he didn't offer to is he didn't want me to see it. But I didn't know I should ask, like, let's sit down and look at all the credit card statements and, you know, the bank accounts and all of that. So I just trusted that we were okay. And then when we got married, I realized he had a tremendous amount of debt. I was so angry and so hurt and so sad, because I didn't know that.
This is after the marriage, after the wedding.
It was the first month when the bills started to come in, and I was floored. Because I thought it was like $20,000. It was over $100,000. I'm like, oh my God, how are we ever going to pay this off? And now I like married it. I didn't know to look at that and to think about it. And even if we had sat down and gone through it all and I'd said, oh, okay. In our relationship, it showed a different challenge, which is like, are you being fiscally responsible? And that showed its little head throughout our marriage, because my husband and I looked at money differently. I was on my own at 17. I don't have debt. I mean, I lived very differently because of the life that I have had. And so Ted and I were incredibly different in how we looked at things. His viewpoint is money will always come. I used to say to him, our outflow needs to be dependent upon our inflow. And he'd say, no, we just have an inflow problem. I'm like, no, we don't have an inflow problem. We have an outflow problem, because we're spending more than we have. He's like, yeah, no, it's just an inflow problem. I'm like, okay, until we can raise the inflow, we have an outflow problem. So we looked at money differently. So it's important to find out, like, how compatible are we here? How do you spend? How do you travel? Are we going to save for a house? When are we going to retire? Are we paying for the kids' weddings and colleges? This is some important questions to have. What lifestyle do you want to have?
We often don't know what proverbial skeletons our partner has in their financial closet until they reveal it. And a lot of that, I feel like, does come from a sense of safety, right? We want to be able to communicate from a heart space, from a genuine care of the other person and the relationship, so that we are free to discuss our financial desires, hopes, dreams, and obligations.
Well, and if you think about it, if you're saying, let's say it's marriage, I'm going to partner you forever, they need to know what they're taking on, whether that's family, whether that's money, whether that's obligations you've made. Maybe you've told your parents they can live with you. Maybe you have promised your godchild you're going to pay for their college. Any kind of pre-commitment you have, your partner needs to know. And health too. People will get married and not talk about health issues that they have. That's not okay. Addictions that are hidden. That's not okay. You're not really truly partnering with that person. You're saying, I will love you completely and you'll love me completely, but I'm not going to tell you about this little side thing. That's kind of problematic. You know, a porn addiction, that's something that needs to be shared. This is a tough one that a lot of women won't share, that they've been
sexually abused. Now, if you don't see that it's impacting you in your relationship, okay. But if you know it's impacting you in your relationship, there needs to be a discussion about how you feel sexually, how you feel about yourself, how you feel about your partner. Because otherwise, especially if you're a partner that's not having sex before marriage, they need to know that there's some healing that needs to happen there. Doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to marry you, but there's the place of knowing like what you are signing up for. And if you're telling someone, I want to love you completely, that's part of it. I think that that authenticity and that honesty is critical for a healthy relationship.
It's almost like informed consent, right?
Yeah.
If you are entering into, consenting into a relationship with somebody or a life with somebody, it will help to know what you are consenting to.
Which makes perfect sense, but we don't do it. And we're required by law, at least when I got married, to have like a STD test. So your partner would know if you had any STDs when you got married. It was part of the blood work you had to do. But you don't have to reveal anything financially. You don't have to reveal, you know, anything that's gone on before. And I find that fascinating that you would choose to marry someone and then them not know and then think it's going to go well. If you're scared of sharing something with your partner, you need to question whether there's a way to change that. Because if you're scared of sharing something with your partner, a part of you is going to close off and they're not going to be able to love all of you. And you also might be looking at them poorly. If Ted had said to me, yeah, I've got $100,000 worth of credit card debt, will you still marry me? Then I would have stepped in knowing exactly where he was and what was going on. That would have helped when I opened up those credit cards to take the deep breath and say, okay, you knew this. You knew this. Here it is. Instead of like, what? Shock value isn't good in a relationship. Finding out something that's, you know, hidden and hurtful to you, you don't feel loved. You feel cheated. And even if the person didn't want that to happen, it doesn't mean that's not going to happen. People will step into emotional infidelities or infidelities and say, like, I'm not going to tell her because she'd be hurt. Well, okay, come on now. Yeah, of course. But you're choosing to do something for yourself. Why would they not be able, or should they not be able to have the opportunity to decide if they'll accept that?
It all comes down to communication, exactly what we're talking about today. And
how much you want to love your partner.
What I'm hearing from you, is are you communicating about the things that are most essential, most important?
And they're hard. They're hard, but you also have the opportunity, if you're with somebody who really is a great match for you, if they can just hold space while you're helping yourself heal through whatever you need to heal through, you can actually change that trajectory that you have had your whole life for it to be different. And that's where a relationship is sacred. If I have always been hit whenever I say the word hot dog, and I don't ever say the word hot dog because I'm scared you're going to hit me, and you promise me you're going to be that person who doesn't, when I let myself go to that place of fear and you don't, now I don't tie saying hot dog with being hit. And now you've helped me clean up an injury from my past and given me a different reality for my future. Oh my gosh, that's glorious. Happens with people who've been raped, happens with people who've been lied to or deceived. And our fear is, I so want you to be other than what I've experienced, but I don't know that you are. And that's why we get so triggered. That's why triggers are so big, because a trigger is saying, this could be the same or it might not be. And let's see if it cannot be. And let's see if we can change your future going forward from this individual with how this is going to be for you. Doesn't mean they're not going to, you know, do things that are hurtful in other areas, but it can be a place where you help yourself heal in a way that you've never experienced before. And that's when you really feel loved and connected. You're safe from me. Ooh, you don't beat me up when I make a mistake. Wow, you actually accept me.
I love it.
I do too.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Heather Brown. The time has absolutely flown by.
It has.
And I do have to finish by asking the final question I ask all of my guests, which is, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
That there's no limit to it. That it's absolutely endless. And there's continually more being created, and it's all around. And if you let it, it's all within. And no matter how much you give, there's no shortage. And that's beautiful.
Absolutely. Love is limitless.
Love is limitless. That'll be the name of the podcast.
Dr. Heather Brown, author of Speaking with the Heart, Transforming Your Relationship and Communication with Compassion and Connection. For our listeners who want to learn more about you, how can they find you?
My website's absolutely the hub of Heather, www.drheatherbrowne.com. And my book, my TEDx, my courses, my freebies, everything's on there. Any questions that listeners have, feel free to pop me an email. I'll be happy to respond and let you know what I think or what I know, or pass you along to somebody else if that's what's best.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. It's been such an enlightening conversation. It's so wonderful to speak about the heart and with the heart and from the heart with you. Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed it, Zach. Thank you so much and bless you.
Wow. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you remember all of the valuable lessons that Dr. Heather Brown shared with us today, including if you enter into a relationship expecting the other person to fill you or fix you, it's likely not going to work out. One thing that hurts relationships is the belief that your partner no longer loves you. To be a better partner, you can ask, is there some place that I've fallen short for you? Where did you feel the most loved and supported in our relationship? Four questions to ask before having a conversation include asking yourself, why are you having this conversation? Are you sure this conversation is going to benefit the relationship? Are you open to their viewpoint and their opinions? And is now a good time? And don't forget, adding compassion to our communication softens it. And there's no limit to love. It is endless. Continually more is being created. It's all around us and all within us. Thanks again for listening. Remember, you are perfect just the way you are. You are lovable, loving, and loved.
Thanks again for listening to the Learn to Love podcast. To learn more about the show and your host, head over to zachbeach.com or theheartcenter.com. You can also follow Zach on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.